Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Just one point that I was trying to, I felt relevant that that may be an angle that we have not necessarily looked at. So in the previous section on the verse 41, Vyavasayatmika Bhuti, is that those who are not fixed are diverted by many branch fruit of desires. Such less intelligent people are attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, say there is nothing more than heavenly enjoyment. Thus they are bewildered and bereft of the resolute determination for Krishna's devotional service, samadhi. Such people are in a diseased condition because they deprive themselves of real happiness. Okay. Right. Prabhupada. Body must be considered a diseased condition. A diseased man cannot enjoy himself properly. A man with jaundice, for instance, will taste sugar candy as bitter. But a healthy man can taste its sweetness. In either case, the sugar candy is the same, but according to our condition, it tastes different. Thus, we are cured of the diseased concept of bodily life. We cannot taste the sweetness of spiritual life. If we really want freedom from the disease, miseries of material existence, we must minimize our bodily demands and pleasures. Okay, desire for sense gratification. Then where's the? There's one other. It comes in the purports. Okay, in the purports, Prabhupada's talking about mental speculation, right? And speculating on this principle of sense gratification, because generally we think of speculation as on something intellectual, like philosophy or that. But there's also the speculation on sense gratification that would be in connection with this that attached to the flowering words of the Vedas. Is that an element of sense gratification is there in the life, right? And so now we nurture that by, we know that material engagement of the senses is not going to give any happiness, right? And when we apply the sense, right, we may not have gotten what we expected, right? So then what do? Right? It means the intelligent thing is just to give, you know, say, okay, then that confirms what the Shastra says.
Try to adjust.
Yes, we try to adjust. So how is that done?
By speculation.
Right? You speculate that, well, if I did like this, then I would be happy. You understand? So in other words, contemplation of something that ends in Krishna, right? You're taking philosophy, you're taking something that the Vedas are saying, and you're looking at it from different angles to understand Krishna. What is that called?
Buddha yoga.
Buddha yoga, there's a specific term.
Manana,
okay, and then that whole process, that's also practicing, but just where you're discussing it.
Krishna Katha?
Vichar. Right? Vichar means looking at it from different angles. Right? Now, if Krishna's not connected, the same process, what do we call it?
Speculation.
You understand? So in other words, this point of being attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, we'll say, well, we'll look at this, yeah, those low-class karmis. But actually, if you look at it, it's not good. And if it's low-class, yes, we'll agree. But how much more low-class is mental speculation on the sense gratification that's not based on the Veda? You understand? Like that. So the principle is that the Vedas are saying that, you know, you perform your duties, you know, in the Varnashram system, you'll be, you know, materially everything will go nice, you'll be satisfied, all these different things. So they're correct on one level. It means within the material sphere, technically there is no happiness. But what people here call happiness, you can get it by following this Vedic system. Does this make sense? Right? So now, but for us, how important is that? Not important. So for us, it's Daiva Varnashram that's important. Means the Varnashram system is always connected to Krishna. Right? So how much detail is there in the Vedic system? All that is connected to the Lord. So in other words, it's how to be engaged in His service. Right? But if you're looking at Varnashram from the point of it's materially going to make me happy and satisfied, that is the flowery words of the Vedas. Right? Not as flowery as, you know, you perform a big ashrameda yajna and then you go to the heavenly planet. You know, that's even more flowery. But the point is that by performance of an activity in the material world, that's going to create your material happiness or satisfaction or well-being. Is it actually a reality? Can the soul be happy in the material world?
No.
Right? What is the only condition that the soul can be satisfied in the material world?
In devotional service.
You understand this subtle point? So how much of what we do we think we're going to get a material benefit for? That's the attachment. So that's what's meant here. Thus, they are bewildered and bereft of the resolute determination for Krishna's devotional service. So it's not saying here, samadhi. So it's not so samadhi is a very advanced stage. So that means this could be referring to neophyte devotees. We'll generally take it whenever there's something like this, you know, dirty, stinky, smelly karmis. Right? But who is Arjuna? He's a devotee. What's he bewildered by? Family attachment. Based on what? And that is, but it's he's just made it up himself? He's taking it from authority, from the Veda. So he's pious. But he's still thinking that if I deal with the family members, you know, properly, I don't have this battle, we'll be happy forever. Will he be happy forever?
No.
Bhima is how old? Bhishma is how old? How much longer is he going to live? Right? You know, all of them, everybody there is going to die. So ultimately, there's nothing in the material platform that can make you happy. All there is just Krishna consciousness, that's all. But as an individual, right, the soul is a person. And persons have ways of interacting with other persons. Does that make sense? Therefore, you have to have a culture to do that. So the Vedic system is the reflection of that culture in the spiritual world that's 100% engaged in Krishna service. Right? It's the natural culture for those engaged in Krishna service. But it comes here as a reflection. Right? So you can be materialist and not follow the reflection and be an animal. Or you can be a human being and follow that. But even if you're human, is that enough to make the soul happy? You understand? No. So it has to be that even that's connected to Krishna. Right? So when it doesn't work, right? And then we speculate on, well, other ways to make it work that will make me happy. That's the speculation on sense gratification that's being talked about in the purports. Understand? So we understand the depth that we're working at here. You know, in other words, the very, you know, basis of our existence. You know, that's the problem with Arjuna. Arjuna. He's trying different ways to figure out how he'll adjust the situation, though based on religious principles in some way, or Shastra in some way. But he's using it not for the purpose that the Shastra gives it, to elevate yourself, but to just get done what he wants to get done. Right? So technically he's using the Shastra's dharma for his own purpose, niti. And ultimately it comes down to some things, to sense gratification, so therefore it's just art, karma. Right? He's not thinking of using it for actually what the purpose they're for. He's misapplying, he's dropping them. Right? So that's the problem, is that's why it says manoratha, that like this, like on the mind of the chariot, they can just go anywhere and use anything anyway. Right? You know, in the beginning, the first chapter, Duryodhana is speaking very nicely, Shastra, following all etiquettes, but he's only using it for artha. Yes?
Is Arjuna in his confusion expressing all the main archetypes of illusion, one after the other?
Would he be explaining all the aspects of illusion? I would expect so, because otherwise how is it that by the Gita, it answers all questions. It's the foundation. All spiritual life, everything to do with spiritual life is here in this book. You understand these principles, then going into any other book won't be a problem. Right? And since we mentioned other books, we just bring up something now because some are going, and just because I wanted to. Devotees are interested, then they can move on this. Is this course that we're following now, you know, it's the Bhakti Shastri course, right? The books Prabhupada defines. So our courses are based on the books that Prabhupada defines. And in defining this, it was much more, on one sense, since so many books weren't there, then there may be a change in where he applies what book in the four course. It means the four Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhava, Bhakti Vedanta, Bhakti Sarvabhauma. And so as books are published, especially Chaitanya Charitamrita and that, then he started making adjustments. Otherwise, he only had up to Bhaktivedanta. But once Chaitanya Charitamrita was written, then started Bhakti Sarvabhauma. Right? And many times smaller books, Brahma Samhita, other books were included. And he also mentions, you know, someone who, he was expecting the disciples by 75 to be Bhaktivedantas and initiate, right? And then in other purport, I think it's first canto, I mean the first chapter, first or second chapter of Bhagavatam, he's mentioning that someone should know the six systems of philosophy to sit on the Vyasasan, right? And who sits on the Vyasasan? Right? The spiritual master, right? So now you're connecting. Bhaktivedanta means second, you know, the full Bhagavatam, and Vedanta Sutra, which explains the six systems. You understand? So through these methods, then you can see by what Prabhupada says directly on the subject, or what he says related to the subject, what things are connected. Right? So then when he made finalized is what we'd say, you know, the Gita, first part of Nectar of Devotion, Ishopanishad, Upadeshamrita's Bhakti Shastri, first six cantos, then that plus first six cantos of Bhagavatam is Bhaktivaibhava, that plus last six, then that's Bhaktivedanta, and Chaitanya Charitamrita as the Bhakti Sarvabhauma. So we've added other literatures that connect with this, that are different places where probably talks about them, right? So, and in connection with Mayapur specifically, he was mentioning about the school here, issuing degrees of divinity. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, because it's the Bhakti Shastri, that's the main part, that's the structure of it, but there's all these supplementary literatures and studies then we're giving these divinity degrees rather than bhakti shastra. You finish this, you'll end with the divinity degree, right? It'll be mentioned about the books in the bhakti shastra, but it's specific. Does that make sense? Okay. So in this, so this main study that we're going through now by this workbook, then this will give you the diploma of divinity. Okay. Now, Pandava Bandava, in doing this work, then he was, you know, because you see he's pulling from Bhagavatam and everywhere. In doing that, he saw a lot of purports where Prabhupada's talking about the Gita and taking what's in the Gita and then giving some further understanding. In other words, vichar. Right? So he's taken all that and compiled that together into a work. So all 18, any purport that's discussing a point in Gita, right? Something added, you know, that we could get more, I mean, you always get more benefit, but it's specifically, it's not just repeating that, but it's bringing out something more. Then that has been put into this work, right? So the idea was is that this work would be, basically, it could be studied either after this, you do this, and then after, during the summer, then deal with this, you know, study that, and, you know, before next September, then you can get extra credit for that, or it can be done simultaneously, which if depends if you have the time, the inclination would probably be easier, because you're reading the one, you're reading the other, there'll be more meaning. So what we're offering is that from this Monday, coming Monday, if anybody would like, then they can get this material from Pandava Bandava. It means what would be on the purports on the chapter and whatever is the extra question. So you'd have an extra essay to write. And for this, it would give basically be an honor. So instead of being a diploma of divinity, it would be an advanced diploma of divinity. And so there'd be much more understanding. It would also, if you do, it's nice. It'll make it easier to understand next year's course. But even if you don't worry, it will work fine. But for those who like to do like this, do that deeper study, then you speak to Pandava Bandha. And means like after the class, maybe speak so he knows what to arrange like that. Okay, so that means that the questions that you have already, those would go on, and there'd be an extra coursework. Okay? Yes? Yes?
Raj, if we properly engage our human nature,
yes,
and in our activity we connect it to Krishna, is it possible to get as much satisfaction by that as by direct devotional service?
Will it be as much as direct devotional service, but the indirect? No, that's why indirect is never quite the same. Means if it's fully absorbed in Krishna, then there's no difference, because then it's direct on that platform of dhyan. That's why we'll see later that Dhyana Yoga is introduced. But we see Dhyana Yoga, what it's describing, is not the first six stages, right? That'll come up. Right? You have the Yoga Rudha, Yoga Rurukshu. So the first six are considered part of Karma Yoga. So we have our own method of Karma Yoga, our own sadhana. Right? When the last two, these are what's connected with Samadhi, right? The actual Dhyana and Samadhi. So that aspect, that is also direct. But before that, it's not direct, it's indirect. So in any case, indirect will never give the same flavor as direct. You know what I'm saying? So that's the aspect. But the point is, since we're going to be involved in indirect, that indirect should be connected to Krishna. Then we become purified of it. Otherwise, it distracts us. Right here. Then we don't get that resolute determination. So we don't come to the platform of samadhi. Yes?
When someone takes formal sannyas, does it mean that now the indirect is given up?
The indirect is given up. We could say the indirect is a lot less. You know, because you still have to, you know, brush your teeth and, you know, stuff like that. So because that is brushing your teeth, you're doing it for Krishna, but it's not exactly direct. It's not like you're putting flowers on Krishna's head or something, you know, and decorating or offering an artik or chanting his holy name. You understand? Those are direct. So indirect means those things that are not. So everybody's engaged in direct. That's why the Chaturshloki, when it mentions that, you know, in all times, all places, all circumstances, you should see Krishna up to this, meaning directly and indirectly. In other words, from Brahman all the way up to Parama, to Bhagavan. Right? So directly and indirect, it's a matter of how much. So you see that Brahmachari, Vanaprastha, Sannyas, the volume of direct is greater. It means that you're in ashram, there's only sadhana. You don't have the family aspect. Right? Well, grihastha means the family aspect is added to ashram. Right? So that's where your indirect is. Does that make sense? So there's more of it. But the reason one goes into it, because there's a need for it. And so one's going to do those things anyway. So now one should do them connected to Krishna. Right? So that way then you make advancement dealing with your indirect needs. Right? In other words, we see them as direct. You know, physical, emotional, all, you know, our ego, our social, all this is direct. But connecting to Krishna is indirect because it has another purpose, and then we connect it back to Krishna. Does that make sense? Right? So ultimately, then it comes to the point where it's just you're absorbed in Krishna. Then at that point, you can say there's not really much difference. But there's going to be a difference in taste. Right? Otherwise, why is there a difference in Vipralamba and Sambhog? Right? You know what I'm saying? So there's going to be a taste difference. But there's not going to be any difference in effect. Like that. But until one gets to that platform, that basically means when you're liberated. But until liberation, there will be a difference. You know, slight. But that's the idea, is if one is always engaged like that and understands that, you can see the difference. And so you can see that Krishna is the source. And even I'm being the indirect, the difference between indirect and it's connected to Krishna, and then it's not connected to Krishna, you can see the difference. So you're able to compare all three. Right? And you're also able to compare. You're able to compare not following Vedic principles, following Vedic principles. Then following Vedic principles, not connected to Krishna, and connected to Krishna. Right? And then what is direct devotional service? And then within that we can see, is it pure devotional service or is it mixed with something? So like this, that's why Buddhi Yoga, we have the intelligence to see the difference. Then we can start to be convinced, okay, this is what we should do. Instead of, but in the Shastra it says we can do this and that, and, you know, this will come up in your Nectar Devotion study, right? When you're dealing with anartas, like in anarta nivritti, there's six stages. So the third stage is where, Shastra says, you know, you could get married and, you know, engage one's all activities in the Lord's service, but at the same time as then renunciation, you know, frees one from all, you know, worldly activities, and one is able to direct one's more energy and that towards the Supreme Lord, but, you know, at the same time, you know, understand? So this is where one is confused, because one can't see the difference between the direct and indirect. You know, someone's trying to compare them. Or within indirect, then something that's more direct and something less direct. You're making these kind of things. You know, because of attachment.
By performing the indirect properly, the taste for the direct will increase?
The taste for the direct. You could say, one, the connection to Krishna, that will increase. But what we'll do is it will get rid of the distraction, because that's the point. Resolute determination's not there. Why not? Because you're thinking of something else. Resolute determination means there's one thing. Right? Ekeha Guru Nandana. So that's the Bhagavad, is it's one pointed. Right? And in Pancharatra it's called Ekayana, means one pointed. It's just the Lord, the deity. So in Bhagavad and Pancharatra, it's Ekayana. Like you hear of an Ekayana Bhakta. That means someone who's on the liberated platform. They have no other interest. So it's either through Pancharatra rules and regulations or not through Bhagavat. But they're focused just on the Lord. Does that make sense? So on these lower levels of the neophyte and the Madhyama, there are maybe other distractions. Though neophyte means the distractions are very prominent. Madhyam means they're minimal. They still exist, but they don't get in the way so much. You still have to be careful. You know, and that's why the intelligent, you know, analytical paths are given, so you can root it out. But the point is you're absorbed more in Krishna. The focus is greater. Does that make sense? Right? So in other words, we should see that the devotional principles that we're following are followed because of the benefits of pleasing Krishna, as opposed to simply the mundane that I will get benefit from this. Right? I go to the temple program, people respect me and stuff like this, or he doesn't go to the temple program, there's an opportunity to do something that will put them in a bad light. You know, it comes up in a community meeting or this or that. And because what's the motive?
I'm better than him.
I'm better. Why? Why am I better? No, but why am I? How am I proving my controlling and enjoying? I follow all the programs. You understand where the weakness comes that people don't take the pro-Vedic seriously? You understand? Because it's as non-devotional as those who reject it. It's all Niyamagraha. But it's a pious Niyamagraha as opposed to an impious Niyamagraha. That's the difference. But they want credit for what they've done. And the reason it's wrong is it's against Shastra, it's against the rules, it's against Dharma. Not that it doesn't please Krishna. That word just doesn't come out of their mouth. You understand? So
that's why the last snare for devotees is name, fame, duration.
Yes, like that. Of course, that will go and it'll be on a higher platform. But that name, fame, and adoration is I am advanced and I am the guru of devotees. Those are the final two subtle forms of controller and enjoyer. Controller, I am advanced. Right? Is it? Yes. And enjoyer is I am guru of devotees. Because if you're a guru of devotees, that means then you'll have association, you'll have, you know, interaction, you know. You don't have to put so much emphasis on that, because that falls back into the morality thing. Because what's wrong with service? Service is what people do. You know what I'm saying? It puts too much emphasis that there's a problem with service. Understand? Yes, one's attachment is being served, but the comment is made because of that. Because otherwise, you know, it's natural everyone will serve. But mostly what happens when people talk about, you know, advanced devotees and people serving them and this is bad? What's the resolution that comes out of their stupid meeting?
No one should serve.
No one should keep the picture of the guru where anyone can see. No one this and that. No one should talk about anything like this. What does it come out? Completely atheistic, non-devotional resolution. Why? Because they think service is the problem. It's not. It's the attitude of the service is the problem. Service is the glory. You know what I'm saying? So what we're talking about here that Krishna's pointing out, you know, in a generic sense, is the basis of our mundane mentality and the inability to see the spiritual. You know, and as soon as we think the spiritual is the ritual. No, the ritual is the medium for the spiritual. Just as the ritual is the medium for the material. Right? The Karmakani does an artik for his deity, and the devotee does an artik for the deity. So is the artik the problem?
No.
No. It's the mentality. You know? One is worshipping any deity that will give him the results he wants. The other is focused on Krishna. Right? And then within that focus on Krishna, then there's higher and lower. Right? Even within the karmis, there's higher and lower. Someone who's more detached is better. He's detached. He's performing in a nice karmia, and that at the moment he's not worried about what he's going to get. He's worried about focusing on, are the priests satisfied? Is everything going nicely? Is there proper arrangements? You know, feeding the Brahmins, taking care, not trying to make himself the center of attention. So you consider it. He's a good yajaman. Right? But still, the ultimate point is, he wants to go to the heavenly planets. So in the same way, the devotee, now he's added Krishna. But now there's still the element is, how much of his karma and jnana still there. Right? So Gita is showing us where all the places karma and jnana hide. Not for the purpose to just study them separately, and this is a problem, so we replace, you know, the morality and those elements of artha with moksha. Right? There may be a higher platform, just like we said, the pious person who follows the Vedic is better than the person who doesn't. But still, until Krishna touches it, then it doesn't have any meaning. Does it make sense? So you have to be very, very careful like that. Otherwise, that's why it appears. Like here, one could deduce from this is, oh, we're, you know, against pro-Vedic. But if you look around in this school, what do you see? Vedic. Right? So it's not that. It's the mentality that makes it non-devotional. Right? So that's what Prabhupada was suddenly talking about, those who are not following the Vedic culture. But he'll also talk about those who are following the Vedic culture. But he's the one that recommends following it. So he's talking about the mentality. When the mentality is wrong, it's a problem. Yes.
So would that be the difference between the Manamoy platform and the Vidyanamoy platform?
No, it would be the difference between the first four levels of consciousness and the last, Anandamoy. Because Anandamoy means that it's devotional. If there's a mix of these others, then it won't be pure devotional service. But now, what we were discussing before is if it's progressive, it may be mixed, but you're connecting that mix to Krishna and purifying it. So then that's sincere. One will advance. That's progressive. That's the Buddha Yoga. Right? But if it's not, one's distracted by that and emphasizes that, and that becomes your platform of existence, then it's a problem. Because our platform is just to serve. That's all there is. That's all that's important. Anything else is not actually important. But since we have to serve through some medium. Therefore, then we use the Vedic culture and whatever facilities are available. We apply in devotional service, we apply it through the culture, and the culture is applied on the situation. Does that make sense? So at the end of the day, it may look traditional, it may not look traditional, but it will carry the right flavor. Right? Because the philosophy, the devotion, the culture is correct. Now the form of it, if it's ideal, great. If it's not ideal, it doesn't matter. Does that make sense?
Maharaj, when we are analyzing our desires, how can we differentiate between if they're needs or if they're wants?
Need is if you don't get it, you'll still live. I mean, want is like that. Need is you don't get it, there's serious problems. In other words, a need is a distraction. A want kind of, you know, comes up and goes away. But if you think about a want long enough, it becomes a need. You know, that's the thing.
So if you ignore a need long enough, it will become a want.
If you ignore a need long enough, does it become a want? No, it just stops being part of your field. You know. But the point is this based on, because fulfilling it is whether it's done according to what's appropriate for the situation, right? For you and the situation. Because it's not a problem in fulfilling needs, right? As long as it's done in connection to Krishna. Right? In other words, we have to be able to accommodate a range. As long as it's this or that, we'll always have problem with the philosophy. The finer points. Right? So the point is that there is the standard of what we're trying to get to, then there's the position we're at. Just like, let's say we want to go to Calcutta. Are we in Calcutta now?
No.
Okay. So now you make a plan how to get there. So as long as it's progressive, then if we go, okay, well, he's in Krishnagar, so he's not in Calcutta, so he's a nonsense. No. But if he gets off the bus in Krishnagar and says, well, you know, hey, I'm on the project, what's the big deal? Then you'll say he's a nonsense. You know what I'm saying? So simultaneously, the process being followed is equated with the goal because activities give results. At the same time, is it's, you know, you're not, you know, it's not over until it's over. You understand? When you've come to prema, then you can relax. But those on prema don't relax. They're always busy serving Krishna because of their affection. Does that make sense? Right. So in other words, any condition that anyone's in, they can start at that point and move forward in Krishna consciousness, no matter what it is. That's why there's the examples of Magrari the hunter and others. Right? You know, anybody here is like, for fun, they go out and snare small animals in such a way it half kills them. Anyone here? No? Okay. So, that means you don't have anyone, you know, like that. So we don't have to worry that the process won't work on us. Right? That's the point of these examples. Is that no matter, because otherwise some will say, oh no, he's done this, he can never take up devotion, he can never, he's visiting. You know, this is not Vaishnava philosophy. They can find maybe some other world religion will accommodate it, but Vaishnavism doesn't look like that, because the soul, eternal. Iron can always be put back in fire. You know, this thing is, once it's taken out, it can never be put back in. It means that you don't know what you're talking about. Blacksmiths do it all the time. Put it in, take it out, put it in, take it out. Right? Does that make sense? But the change happens when it's in. Does the iron sitting there, can you change it? No. But they put it in the fire, then they can change it. Right? So the dynamic development happens in the fire. And people want to make a direction that takes people out of the fire and then say you have to improve yourself. That means they have no idea about Krishna consciousness. They actually have faith that the material world itself is a good place and is based on good principles, and by following activities in the material world, you will actually be elevated. This is their illusion. But all we're saying is that people may do this on a bigger level only because they have the same mentality that we, not being so big, do on a smaller level. You know what I'm saying? So it's not that, oh, this one does that wrong, but I'm okay. No, we do it on a small level. You know what I'm saying? Right? The man has a pawn shop, right? He makes a mistake in his business, he loses money. Right? The billionaire makes a mistake in his business, he loses money. So you could say, well, his is worse, he lost more. No, in comparison to what he has, it's the same nature. So powerful people make big, for small people, it's a bigger mistake. But in their world, it's just, as much as they make the mistake, they can correct it. We're being small, we can't correct it, so therefore it's big for us. You understand? So examples are given for applying in our life. Does that make sense? Yes? Okay, so then, moving forward. The stita pragya is able to control his senses according to his plan. His secret is that he has acquired a higher spiritual taste, which keeps him free from material enjoyment. Right? In other words, he's replaced a higher activity with a lower one. He gets a taste for it. The mind is always willing to accept something that will give more taste. Right? That's not the problem for the mind. It's just convincing that the mind that it is higher. So when the mind's higher, then it will, like this, the sthita pragya, it'll stick to a plan because it knows there is a higher result. Because ultimately the mind has to choose. Right? The intelligence doesn't choose. If it's according to proper logical intelligence what you choose, then you'll say that was an intelligent decision. But still it's the mind that makes the decision. Right? So then he's taken this. So that's his secret. Right? So one, why can't you do? Because we're contemplating the lower activity and it's wrong rather than the higher activity and what's right about it. So we're not inspired, right? In other words, you're inspired. You'll get a result of something by performing the activity. You'll perform the activity by being inspired. You're inspired by knowing the field. Right? So in other words, if you go to do an activity and then you keep doing the same thing wrong, and you say, why can't I do this? Why can't I control the mind? This, that, blah. You know, when's this going to happen and all that, you know. Then that's the wrong focus. The focus is on what is it you want to get done? What's better about it? Right? Than, oh, I've done wrong. And no, what is better about it? What's the position? Why is it better? What would the process of doing it better look like? It's not that I didn't do something wrong. What's the positive? What should I be doing? And when that's there, then you get inspired. When you're inspired, because Krishna reciprocates according to what?
Our desire.
Our desire. Right? Because desire is what is the is the point before the activity.
And what we contemplate is what we ultimately desire.
Yes, and what we contemplate is what we will desire and what we'll need. So you want to change something, contemplate what it is you want to get to in connected to Krishna. Not contemplate, oh, I'm such a sinful wretch, or this and that, I'm so fallen, I'm so disgusting. You know, yeah, then you keep, and then you use the mental speculation to find newer and newer ways how you're the lowest and most disgusting, you know? You know what I'm saying? Does it make sense? In verse, because material enjoyment doesn't mean the senses aren't engaged. He's able to control his senses according to his plan. His plan is to engage them in Krishna's service. So material enjoyment is when the senses aren't connected to Krishna. Right? The soul is ananda, means happiness, enjoyment. But that's enjoyment on the spiritual platform. Right? The spiritual happiness is the natural state. But spiritual happiness in connection with the Supreme Person, that's the more natural state. And the difference between the two is like, you know, the fractional portion of a drop compared to an unlimited ocean. Right? So therefore, we're trying to go from the material through to the devotional. That makes sense? So one is happy. It says, when one is satisfied. Satisfaction means what? Which is greater, happiness or satisfaction?
Happiness.
Happiness.
Satisfaction.
Sad, why?
Because happiness is one moment.
Yes.
What do you mean?
We were discussing the term material enjoyment. It means, in other words, we were talking before about the levels of material, spiritual, and in relationship to giving a comparison. You understand? Satisfaction means that's a continual thing. Happiness is the moment that the pain is removed. Need means you have a pain, right? And so, removing that pain, that moment the pain's removed, you call that happiness. Right? You're hungry. It's a pain. It's a need. You have to eat. And then when you eat, you remove the pain. Then you say, I'm happy. Right? All material happiness is like that. It's removal of pain. That's what Prabhupada says. It's not positive. Positive means it's actually a connection to Krishna. Because he's real, you're real, eternal. That interaction, that gives real happiness. So actual happiness means prema. It doesn't mean anything less. It means, you know, something mundane doesn't give. So here, material enjoyment means it's not connected to the Lord. So his plan means the senses are connected to the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why the sthita pragya, he can either function if there's no need to engage the senses in a variety of way, he can work in a very detached form. Right? So if there's no need, then that's where you see, you know, the Goswami is living under a tree and this and that. There's no need to engage the senses beyond that. So that's all that's engaged. Or we see someone like Ambarish Maharaj. He's a Grihastha, he's a Kshatriya, he's the emperor of the world. You're not going to get more engagement of the senses on any higher platform, at least in this level, than that. And he's a Mahajan. Right? He's sthita pragya, because he only engages his senses according to his plan to serve Krishna. Right? Does this make sense? So this is the point, is any of these. Now you choose according to what works for you. Right? Yes.
How do we put that in perspective, that, you know, sometimes we say, well, we have our plan, but Krishna has his plan. like that.
Yeah, but what does that mean if it says we have our plan and Krishna has his plan?
Even in service.
Yeah, but what does that mean?
It's not connected to Krishna.
It's not, it means what goes the other way means either it wasn't connected to Krishna, or because you're connecting it nicely to Krishna, Krishna uses you as the medium to get his plan done. Right? In other words, you have your plan and you end up not being the one doing it, then because Krishna had his plan, then there's something more wrong with your plan or your mentality in the plan. But if you start off with your plan and it ends up as something totally different, then you can see it was Krishna's arrangement, then that means that sincerity is there and you are used as the medium to get it done. Or Krishna had something else for you to do. So you always have to see, that's the point, is daiva means it's up to the Lord. You know what I'm saying? We can control, means we can, we have control on observing the environment. How much we observe, that's another thing, but observing the environment, being inspired, making an endeavor. Right? Because all those three, you're using intelligence. Right? Does that make sense? But attachment is what's it based on?
Prayojana.
Is it based on intelligence? That's based on the mind. Right? So we don't have control over that. Control means intelligence. Right? You see the things and you find different ways to go. Attachments and experience. You understand? That's why people deal with their attachment and they think it's fine. Others are complaining because of the lack of intelligence. And they'll say, you don't understand. What does that mean?
You don't
understand the experience that's gained. You know what I'm saying? People make mistakes when they deal with their attachment without intelligence. That makes sense? And because it was an experience, we thought it's all right. So the point is that's beyond what we can control. Right? So the prayojana is controlled by the Lord, because He is everything. He is the process. He is what's going on. So He gives the result according to your, how do you say, not need, not requirement, ability, what you deserve. Right? So He gives according to what you deserve. Does it make sense? So focus means you understand sambandha in all its aspects. Sambandha with the field, sambandha is in the way of the activity, you know, the sambandha in relation to what results you can get, right? What we opened in the introduction. That establishes all those different aspects. Right? And then we're inspired, so that we would call focus. Right? That commitment is there. Inspired means we're committed to do. Right? Then you perform, so focus, then endeavor, which is the actual abhideya. Right? So those things, we're inspired, you know, we're focused, we're enthused, we perform the activity. That's for the end of our control. Then the result that comes, that's daiva. That's up to the Lord. Does that make sense?
So could we be losing focus, thinking that we will control the result?
Yes, we're losing focus, we think we'll control the result. No, we know the activity that gets the result. You understand? But the activity is getting the result. It's not us getting the result. We can perform the activity. We can't get the result. It's just like that. You put the stuff in the blender, and you push the button. Do you get the result?
Yeah.
Do you make the result? No, the blender makes the result. In other words, the activity itself produces the result. But result is based on activity. But we're an instrument in it, right? We'll say, oh, I blended it. No, you didn't. The blender blended it. But you were an instrument to the blender, so it got blended. The jiva doesn't matter which way you look at it and try. The jiva is always an instrument. You know, but the jiva thinks I am the controller, but he's going back home, back to Warsaw. Whenever I think of Warsaw, I always think of this building Stalin built for Warsaw as a gift. There's the exact same thing in Moscow. Of course, bigger. I even think there's one somewhere else, maybe in Latvia, in Riga. So, does this make sense? So the jiva is always an instrument. That's why if he understands that, then he can take part very nicely. Then he's really intelligent. Right? Because he doesn't have the attachment for himself, so he's not clouded, but he wants to see his goal is to please someone else. So that means his intelligence is being used through the whole thing. Right? Does that make sense? Like, when.
So just to clarify, if you want to do something that theoretically is for Krishna in your mind,
mm-hmm.
then somehow you start losing focus.
Right.
Because that's not happening.
Right.
So could that come from the attachment to the result?
Yes, it could come from the attachment to the result, because as soon as you lose focus, what's actually going on in losing focus? You make mistakes. You're not inspired. So not inspired means the sambandh is going down. You put focus on something else. So, or you're looking at, I should get that result, but where is that result?
In the activity, but you're focusing on the result instead of focusing.
Yeah, and where is the result in time?
The future.
And what mode controls the future? Passion. Or then you're thinking about in the past. Well, he did like that, or time before it went. You understand? So what happens is you're not in the present anymore. So you say loose focus means you're not working in the present. You go into the future, the past. Because you're not observing what's going on now and working with it. You're observing it and seeing it's not happening. What's not happening? Your future. Or, I did get like that, but you understand? So you're not actually dealing in the present. So it drops out of the mode of goodness. So therefore, it doesn't work. So that's the thing, is that people really, advanced materialists, is because they don't lose that focus. You know, so even though they totally want the result, they're totally attached to it, but they're only working with what's happening right now. So on that platform, they're actually functioning mechanically according to Naishkarmya. Because Naishkarmya means I'm not trying to get the result. I mean, I'm not attached to the result. I'm focused on doing the work. Right? But it's proper application. I'm focused on the work because I want the result for Krishna. They're focusing on it to get it for themselves. But they're in no way thinking about it. They're only seeing, is what am I doing now? Is it progressing towards where the goal should be? That's why he makes, so much advancement materially. The common person is not focused. That's why they don't get anything. And those people who are focused, they get something.
They'll be thinking like, oh, I've had so much money, but they're not working.
They're not working now.
Yeah.
Because the point is that same guy, he didn't have anything. You know, it's just like, one example, going back. I mean, now you have people and they disappear, come and go. But you had this one, he was a kid. He was working at a stock market. And in those days, they didn't have the electronic little things. It was a blackboard that somebody wrote on. And who's going to write on it? The guy in the suit? No, a kid. Right? So he was one of the kids up there and writing the numbers. And then you erase it and write the numbers again and erase it and write the numbers again. I think they had a teletype, so it's coming through with all the things and they write it on the board. Right? And so he's doing this for years. But he went his whole life doing this. But what was the difference? Because your life, you write the thing, and by habit you can write the numbers. And what are you thinking of? When it's over, or lunch, or, something in the house, or the past, or like that. No, but what was he thinking about, this guy?
What does it mean?
What are the numbers? And he started seeing the patterns. And then at one time, he became one of the guys in the suits, and he made more money than anybody in the suits. Because he was observant of what's happening right now. He understood the field. He understood what you could get from the field, how to deal with the field, all the things that Gita's talking about. But materially, so he got material results. So what we're saying is that same endeavor, you can get all the material results you like, but you won't get back to God. It's temporary. So it's a waste of time. But if you follow the same thing, but for Krishna, then you get all the benefit. Right? But the point is you're working in the moment, it's for Krishna. Right? And if it doesn't work, you use your intelligence to figure out how to make it work. Right? But because it's for Krishna, it's intelligence. Right? But if it's not for Krishna, then that's mental speculation. So in other words, the devotee engages mental speculation in the Lord's service. When it's engaged, it's not called mental speculation. There's one purport where probably talks about this. Devotees, you know, engage mental speculation. Because we generally use the term as a, like material enjoyment. But we take it, all enjoyment's bad from our impersonalistic concept. Right? Enjoyments of this world, that means spiritual, means no enjoyment. Right? That no, it's material is the word here. Right? Like spiritual enjoyment's not a problem. Like Prabhupada says, he enjoys spiritually. Or he enjoys on the spiritual platform. He uses the term. Then we don't say this is bad. Then we say this is good. Because the impersonalists say, you know, Brahmananda, I will be happy. You know, so we're not averse to it. Not necessarily coming from the devotional platform because of the material conditioning. Because we're not averse, therefore we become inspired. But our inspiration may be because we'll get spiritual enjoyment rather than the spiritual enjoyment happens because Krishna is pleased. You know what I'm saying? That with time, then we start to see, hey, you know, I get certain happiness, but the point is that happiness coming from Krishna. So that means if I really want to make myself happy, then I would make Krishna more happy because then I become more happy. Because if he's happy, then only am I happy. So if the more I make him happy, the more happy I'll be. But then one comes to the point of doing that where one gives up trying to please oneself and just please Krishna. Right? So the process naturally goes from our own attachments and our own enjoyments we get from it up to where we're only interested in Krishna's.
So that would be free of karma. So what would be free of jnana?
Well, jnana is also you want to enjoy, but you just want to enjoy in the spiritual platform. Karma is you want to enjoy in the material platform. Karma means I'm willing to do the work to get the material results, and then I'll enjoy in the material platform. The jnana is I don't want to enjoy in the material platform, so I perform no material works. And by doing that process, then I'll enjoy on the spiritual platform. So just one works and one doesn't work, that's all. That's why Krishna says, you know, there's work in non-work and there's non-work in work. Meaning the impersonalists, they do no work, but they're still working because they're working for their own pleasure. While the devotees, they're doing work, but it's not for themselves, it's for Krishna, so that's no work. Right? Does that make sense? But the language is given more poetic, and so we don't catch it. If it was given mystical, we might catch it. But even then, we don't. Unless it's Chinese, then we only take it seriously. Yes?
Maharaj, you gave the example of even a successful materialist. He's successful because he is focused on the activity. Although he wants the result, he focuses on what he's doing. So is that the same? We can relate that to a devotee who ultimately he wants spiritual happiness. And because of that, he's serving the Lord. But when he's serving the Lord, he focuses only on serving the Lord, although his main motivation might be for that spiritual happiness.
Yeah, it might be. Point is activity successful by focusing on it.
Right.
And making the appropriate endeavor. You're not focused, you can't get. That's why, you know. But the point is so ultimately the focus is on Krishna. Is that okay? Okay. Yes.
In common language, we say that I blended and the instrument, the blender was my instrument in doing
yeah.
that. Is this common usage just a result from this idea of I'm in control of the enjoy the doer?
It means it would be, but it's coming in the spiritual world that there is a non-difference between all these elements. In the spiritual world, you don't make the differentiation between the sambandhavidaya and prayojana, technically. Right? Because that's the form of sambit sandini and vladini. So we don't make so much that distinction. Because it's just you want to, you know, do service to Krishna. So there's a need to analyze here because we're using you could say, on one sense, the potency of the activities or the identity, but we're misapplying, we're not connecting to Krishna. So we have to analyze, where are we making the mistake? Because let's say someone, he's chanting his japa, so he could say, I'm doing everything perfectly. Let's say he's not hearing, or he's not pronouncing right, you know, or he's distracted by something else. So to be able to analyze where something is wrong. So that's why this whole analytical process is there. But ultimately, that's why he says, you know, the gopis, they're not great philosophers. So all they know is that Krishna's nice and they love him. That's it. So it doesn't need anything else, because once it's come to that platform, you've switched from the mind being absorbed in material, you know, identity, engagement, and result, to the mind being absorbed in spiritual identity, engagement, and result. So that's the point. So if one's too attached to one, one analyzes to points out what's its fault. You know what I'm saying? You know, a girl goes out, finds something she likes in the market, and comes back and all that, and she's, you know, pretty happy about it and very excited. And, you know, she might even, if it was a little bit more out of the ordinary, be even quite, you know, chuffed about it, right? You know, like that, until she bumps into another girl. And then she points out how that's, you know, a knockoff of this company, and this is the real one, you know. And then what happens? Yeah, that's that. She drops that, and then tries for the higher one. So that's the point. So you analyze how it's wrong. Right? You know, you point out, it's like, well, what's wrong with a knockoff? You know, it's like, you know, it looks the same and all that. It says, yes, the common people will think it's the same. So yeah, when you're riding on the bus, then people will think it's a Gucci bag. But if you're actually walking down Fifth Avenue, then they'll know it's not a Gucci bag. So the people who actually, you know, would use those things will know it's not. So they'll think you're just a common person. You know, and then it's kind of like, oh, okay. You know. Does that make sense? Okay. You understand? So the analyzation is for that. That's why immediately it's taken up, and in the core is the devotional chapters. In verse 60, Arjuna warns Arjuna that if he prematurely renounces his duties and tries to control the senses, by force he will fall down. In the next verse, Krishna reveals that the senses can be controlled only when they are engaged in devotional service. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, the word matpara is most significant in this connection. How one can become matpara is described in the life of Maharaj Ambarish. Srila Baladev Vidya Bhushana, a great scholar and acharya in the line of the Matpara, remarks, quote, the senses can be completely controlled only by the strength of devotional service to Krishna. Right. Yeah, so only by connecting to Krishna can it actually be controlled. Because otherwise we see these persons who are very pious and do very nice things on the material platform, they'd still do something wrong. Right? I mean, think of the piety one would have to be. Who did? Yeah, to become, you know, Brihaspati, or to become the moon. Right? Yeah, but I can't remember which one runs off with the other one's wife. Moon, yeah, okay. Right? You understand? So that's the point, is that at some point the senses can't, because it's only when it's connected to Krishna can they be fully controlled. Right? Does that make sense? With the words matpara, the Lord established that one should fix his consciousness on him and not on something impersonal. Right? Because it has to be him, because the impersonal is still not enough. The impersonal shows you the workings of the world, so it breaks down your attachment to the world, because you see the spiritual element. But it doesn't mean it creates the attachment to Krishna. That comes by focusing on Krishna himself. Right? That's why, having explained Brahman and Paramatma, Krishna explains Bhagavan. Right? Because the other two are nice, but it's because actually all there is him as a person. It's a material concept that there's something separate. That this Brahman is separate, Paramatma is separate. Right? The gopis see Vishnu, they see Krishna. They see Ramachandra. They see Krishna. It doesn't matter, you know. Does that make sense? It's just this. They don't see any different. We make this distinction, right? Which is fine, you know, as we're conditioned. But ultimately, then we see is that it's not that. Why is Krishna Brahman or Paramatma? According to the Gita, what is it in our dealing with him that he manifests in that way?
Our conditioning.
So, but how does that affect?
So we don't want to have personal
how we see him.
Yes, how we see him, and what does Krishna say about that? How does he reciprocate? How we see him. So therefore, we means Paramatma means we can accommodate. Okay, here he's God; he's controlling everything, but he's also there, enjoying with all his associates. You think he's just sitting there alone? We only see the alone business. It's only Krishna. We pray to just Krishna. You understand? But is Krishna ever alone? Like Mahavishnu, what does Mahavishnu do? Right? He sits in the causal ocean. All right. What happened when Krishna and Arjuna went to visit him?
Big castle.
Yeah, castle and servants and, you know, all kinds of things going on. So we tend to not see this aspect. So because of that, Krishna only reciprocates that way. Not the saying it's not going on. Therefore, Paramatma. Understand? But Paramatma, you know, that's why for the devotee, then it says Krishna is sitting in his heart. You know, or Brahman, where does Brahman come from?
His
effulgence. Like you see somebody and look very happy. What's striking about it?
His happiness.
The happiness. But what does that create?
An atmosphere.
An atmosphere, an aura, right? That's the Brahman. You understand? So Krishna is because he is Anandamaya. Therefore, there's always that effulgence. But that effulgence is the effulgence of his qualities. So therefore, that's why when we refer to Brahman, let's say generically Brahman, but when we're dealing in the process, we always refer to Para Brahman.
So the darkness is a false ego not wanting to see that light, so Krishna then manifests by...
Yeah, well, it's just the covering of not seeing things in relationship to Krishna. It's still Brahman, but it just... One is not able to see it in that fashion.
Krishna is dimming it because we want to see it.
Yeah. We like it like that. If we didn't like it like that, why are we still here? It only takes one moment to, you know, go back to Godhead. That's all it takes. Right? How long did it take Maharaj Katvanga?
One moment.
It doesn't even say a second, right? There's 11 moments in 1 second. Right? That's the amount of time that the mind can actually catch. Right? Less than that, it doesn't catch. Right? Huh? I'm not sure. It's a nimisha. I'm not sure how many. You know, it means some start with the blink of the eye. That's a nimisha. Right? So that's you can see that the gopis were catching that. That you know 1/11 of a second was missing in their vision, so they're getting very upset. So you can see that. That's right. A film, then it has to be more than that. Right? 24 frames a second, then you just see it as going. But it's a bunch of, you know, yeah, like that. If it's less, then you can see them. You know what I'm saying? Because you can catch an 11th of a second. So that's why the moment is used, because that is the smallest time frame of experience. Right? Okay. Verses 62 to 63 describe the process of downfall for a sadhaka who controls his senses but fails to engage them in devotional service with the Lord. The result of such forced meditation is that the senses inevitably find their way back to the sense objects. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan writes in his commentary to verse 62, "For the yogi who repeatedly contemplates sense objects thinking he will derive pleasure from them, Jayata, attachment, sangha, to those objects arises." Right? Right? So he will derive pleasure from them. Right? So that's the speculation. Because you can't. Shastra is already defined. No, but we speculate, but possibly this way and that. Shastra says, you know, here he is, I'm a person, I'm God. But the impersonalist speculates. No, but maybe it means this, you know, it means the unborn in Krishna. You know, but if everything is non-dual, how can there be an inside and an out? Okay. Does that make sense? So attachment arises because of that. So it says that it'll find it back to the senses, right? Because of that, attachment, thirst for pleasure from those objects arises. Because the mind only thinks of them. Just because you're contemplating them doesn't mean the attachment has come. Right? But then from contemplating, the attachment does come. Right? And once the attachment comes, then the desire, then that thirst for them, then again the desire comes up. Because remember, we were saying Aniruddha always goes back to Prajumna. So you contemplate them, it develops the attachment. Then the attachment comes back as part of the field. Then you become inspired. And then you make the endeavor, then you actually try to obtain them. Right? Does that make sense? Right? Just like, let's say you have a rope. Right? And something on the other end is what you're trying to get to. Right? So, you're going to see your arm's length as your goal. You'll get that. But now when you pull it, then is it a goal anymore? No, now it's back at it's back with you. It's at the identity now. Right? Then you grab again, and then it goes back. So it always moves like that. What was your goal then becomes part of the field. You're trying to get to New York, so you have to get from here, you know, to the car. Once you're in the car, then that becomes the situation. The car gets to Calcutta. Now you're at the airport. That was your goal. Yeah, get there in 3 hours. But once you're there, that's your field. Right? You understand? So it always keeps coming back to the field. So therefore, by deriving pleasure from them, then attachment arises. Then from that, thirst for pleasure comes. So means there's all these stages. Why are these stages given? Because, oh, that's all, you know, academic. But these are the stages where you can catch it. The contemplation, best is you stop it there. Right? Like, what's his name? Yamunacharya. Right? Yamunacharya. Right? When his mind would contemplate sex life, what would be his response? He would spit. So that kind of like stops the whole process there, right? Spitting's highly unromantic, right? You know. Right? Even a cowboy wouldn't consider it if he's trying to be romantic, right? Does that make sense? Yeah? So that's the point you can go at. But if it hasn't attachments come up, then you can still then analyze it there to try to break the attachment before thirst comes. Because once thirst comes, then that means now it's that prajumna has come up. And so now there's the inspiration to be involved in the activity. Right? And when you can't get that activity, right, means you couldn't do abhideya to get prayojana, then what happens? Krodha. Anger comes. Frustration. Right? So it means it's all happening in this sambandha place. Right? So as soon as it touches, means when it's there, you can break it. As in, it's touched prayojana. Then it makes the sambandha alive, dynamic. So now, but it's still sambandha. You can still break it. Right? And then if it goes anger, then it means there's the problem again. It's sambandha. So that means from the anger, even still, now you can still break it. But now you're just more determined than, you know, like that.
Could I make a biological connection in this moment that I have the thirst? There is like neurosenses emitting lots of heart sense.
Those things will be there, but those are in response to the mentality that's there. Okay. So in other words, these would be on the transcendental platform where they're connected to Krishna, these would be all of your sattvika bhavas and sanchari bhavas, right? That are happening due to, in other words, the physical and emotional transformations and the experience from that comes from absorption in prema, absorption in Krishna. Right? So those things come. Well, even not prema, but it just absorption in Krishna. But that happens naturally in the spiritual body. But in the material world, you have a spiritual body. So is it actually an expansion of the soul? No, it's dead matter. So how do you get dead matter to do things? Right? It has to be mechanics. Therefore, you have, you know, all these hormones and this and that to create the experiences that would come naturally in the spiritual form in connection to Krishna. But here, because it's not connected to Krishna, therefore it's generated mechanically. That's why it's the same hormone, but depending on the situation, the mind interprets it differently. Right, the boy is, you know, walked into the dark alley and all that, and he gets butterflies in his stomach, right? You know, so something dropped into his system to create that, or you know, he sees the girl that he likes that butterflies in his stomach, right? One he'll think is fear, and the other is attachment. It's the same chemical. You understand? It's just how it's interpreted.
The mind
will interpret it because of the mind, therefore the mind pushes on the life airs, which then create all these different things, and then the mind will interpret that. So that's why we're trying to catch the mind, right? But you can't catch it on its own. It has to be engaged in the Lord. So we think, I'll catch it, then I'll engage it. No, the only way is by starting from the beginning to engage it. Right? You know, you just got to surrender. Surrender to what? You know, you're surrendering to the process of engaging in Krishna's service. So if that's brought out, no one will complain. But after 20 years, someone is complaining. Why? Because what did the surrender mean?
Nothing.
Losing some of that, but it was to the control of the person who was asking you to surrender. Mm-hmm. Right? But if that person was being a proper via media, you wouldn't complain. You know. Or if your mentality was right and understood the process that he is only representing and therefore engaging in the Lord's service, you would just see it as the process of devotional service. You'd have no complaint. You know, so either your fault, their fault, both fault. Therefore you see. You understand? But if it was something being done nicer, you got a good result out of it and everything, then you don't think, you know, you're not complaining that, you know, the authority engaged you. It's only when it goes wrong, then you'll say. Right? But it's a lack of understanding, because material world is material world, so something always goes wrong. You know, so we have faith in material world. If he hadn't done that, I would have been happy. No, how would you be happy unless you're engaged in devotional service? There is no happiness outside of devotional service. So just that was an attempt to engage you in Krishna's service. Maybe they did a good job, maybe they didn't do a good job. That's not the point. The point is the only way you will be happy is in connection to Krishna. You know, packing up, moving outside the temple, how does that improve things? You know, if you're going to be more engaged, great. If you're going to be less engaged, you know, like Prabhupada, he was trying to work with the God brothers and everything like that, live in the temple, but they didn't want to preach. They wouldn't expand the preaching. They wouldn't expand the publishing, which Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had given the order to do. So he tried, talked with them, tried to convince them, and they felt there was other more important projects. So by him not living in the mud and living outside and starting his own thing, then he could write his books and publish his journals and everything as he could do. Right? So if it's going to increase, then okay. But if it's just, you know, you don't like this material situation moving to that material situation, what's the meaning? Wet stool, dry stool, so it's still mundane.
If an authority engages us or wants to engage us in some service and he has some personal motivation, if we see it as that he's engaging us on behalf of the Lord,
yeah, we'll get the full spiritual benefit. He's the one who'll end up with the material result. Is that? But at the same time, one has to be intelligent to know that what's doing is going right. Okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think it was New York, Bali Mardan, and he had this some lady, supposedly a Toyota, but she was just somebody off the street. And so then when the whole thing blew up, I don't know what the situation was, but Prabhupada made the comment that, you know, he and that girl may have bewildered the New York devotees, but they never would have been able to do that to the Mayapur devotees, because they would have analyzed it more and figured it out. You know what I'm saying? So, in following, also, you use your intelligence. You know what I'm saying? So, Prabhupada is not commenting that those devotees that were, that, you know, were serving under him didn't get any spiritual benefit. No, they did fine. But what he's saying is they wouldn't have been tricked on this aspect. But, you understand?
Yes.
But still, even though he's tricking on that aspect, still what he was engaging them in was bona fide devotional service. You know what I'm saying? The social platform.
Does that make sense?
Because that was the consideration, was social, not spiritual. You know, no one says it was a gopi come down from the spiritual world or something. So on the social platform, he was saying he wouldn't be able to trick the Mayapur devotees on that platform. Of course, that was then. I don't know about now. Okay. For an impersonalist, there are only two possibilities. He can either reject the sense objects or try to enjoy them, bhogatya. Both positions are unnatural for the living entity and cannot be maintained permanently. Because they say, oh, you know, you have to be natural. This is, you know, artificial renunciation. And then what do they propose? Bhog. So all they're dealing is in bhogatya. Right, so who does bogan tiag? Right, means the ego, but in this case, then the impersonalist. They try to enjoy it, you know, stay away from the sense. Then they enjoy it. Oh, that was nonsense, and then they go back to this, and they go back there. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So they're missing the point. They're not engaging the senses. So they're trying to not control. I mean, control them and not use them, or just use them. So when devotees say, oh, we're just being natural, you know, we're not being fanatic and this and that. But where's the connection to Krishna? Because that's the real point. All this is being said, there's so many techniques, but the real point is the technique's only useful if it's connected to Krishna. The technique on its own doesn't have its own standing. That's where we make the comment. Sense gratification, morality, economics, justice, even liberation, religious principles, none of them stand on their own. You know, if it's not connected to Krishna.
So that would be that verse, whatever austerity you perform, etc., does it have nothing on to me?
Yeah, it means whatever you do for Krishna. And that's why it's also saying, anybody, you know, who's, you know, doing austerity, following their duties, they're given charity, they do sacrifice, whatever it is, the devotee gets all that benefit. Because the purpose of all that is just to connect to the Lord. So he's already connected to the Lord. So whatever you could get from all that comes automatically. You understand Krishna's point? Because he's not going to change one thing what Arjuna does. His social position, his ashram, the activity he's going to perform, right? Nothing is going to change. His weapons, his bow, his chariot, his horses. You know, nothing will change. So what changed?
His consciousness.
His consciousness. That's the whole thing. We're trying to get at the conscious, because that's the one thing you always have a choice. Right? What mind you have, what intelligence you have, what ego and body and senses you have, that's fixed from your previous activities. Right? That's your prarabdha karma. It's there. It's not going to go away. But what can you change? Your consciousness. What results are coming from your past activities? You can't change that. What you can change is your consciousness. That's always available. There's never a time it's not. So this idea, oh, I'm forced and this and that, and where's our free will? No, your free will is consciousness. They want free will meaning, you know, that I can do whatever I want. Free will means when I come out, I drove in my, you know, well, Fiat, and when I walk out, I, you know, see a nice Bentley and get into that and drive off. That's free will, right? You know, that's what they think is, you know. And no one will bother me for it. The police won't come and get me, nothing. In fact, They might even come down and said, well, you did take the one with the, you know, the not so nice color. We have another one here. Would you rather trade for that? Or if you want, you can have both of them, you know, like that, you know. So that's what we're thinking is free will. The devotee of the Lord, however, is not afraid to act with his senses because he knows how to engage everything in Krishna's service. He's not afraid. People are afraid to engage those senses because they're either going to, you know, get distracted from something or get absorbed or they're not going to get the result they want or, you know, some way they're afraid. But the devotee is not afraid. Right? Does that make sense? In the purport of verse 33, Srila Prabhupada writes, by development of Krishna consciousness, one can know that everything has its use in the service of the Lord. Those who are without knowledge of Krishna consciousness artificially try to avoid material objects, and as a result, although they desire liberation from material bondage, they do not obtain to the perfect stage of renunciation. Their so-called renunciation is called phalgu, or less important. On the other hand, a person in Krishna consciousness knows how to use everything in the service of the Lord. Therefore, he does not become a victim of material consciousness. The impersonalist, therefore, cannot enjoy life due to his artificial renunciation. And for this reason, a slight agitation of the mind pulls him down again into the pool of material existence. It is said that such a soul, even though rising up to the point of liberation, falls down again due to his not having support in devotional service. Right? So that means the devotee has no problem engaging the senses, you know, in the Lord's service, whatever it is. Right? But, you know, then that's where the social system comes in. Which ways of engaging the senses would be appropriate, depending upon what kind of mind intelligence and false ego he has. Right? So that's what you're engaging. Varnashram's engaging that, right? Because that you're taking your conditioned nature and engaging it in a spiritual and social system. Spiritual world, the nature you have there is based on the soul. So their form is an expansion of their nature. Right? So they engage themselves in that culture according to that. Mother Yashoda is Krishna's mom. Right? So she follows all the social etiquettes and everything that go with that. Right? You know, Sri Dhamma is Krishna's friend. He follows all the etiquettes that goes with that. Right? But there it's real nature, it's the actual nature of the soul. Right? Meaning them as a servant and the specific detail of their eternal service. Material world, you have a conditioned nature, but the soul still is eternally Krishna's servant. So therefore, you engage that conditioned service, conditioned nature, as according to the natural position of the jiva as Krishna's servant. Therefore, we call Varnashram Sanatan Dharma. Right? So when we say Sanatan Dharma, that means Vidaiva Varnashram. Right? Okay. Does it make sense? So one's able to engage because one knows, but it's according to what is actually the nature. What should you be doing? Right? Does that make sense? You want the facilities of marriage, then you have to take care of it. Right? It's just like, let us say I want some potatoes. Right? And I have some seed potato, and I have some land. What do I have to do?
Yeah,
do all that work, and then I'll get potatoes, right? So you want family life, so it's just going to happen just because you want it? No, just like the potatoes. You just felt like it, and then they just happened. Not only that, they came out of the ground already cut and deep fried. No? You know farming. Is that how it works? No. Okay. So in the same way, why would family life be like that? Just because you feel like it, that's the way it's going to work. Right? So if someone worked like that, just by their feeling, what does that mean?
Foolish.
Foolish, right? Right? Not intelligent. That makes sense? So, that would mean is you want that, willing to work for that. Do I have the nature to work for that? No, I don't want to be involved in this and that. I can't take up. So therefore, then that's why there's three other ashrams. Right? You have family life or three other alternatives. Right? You know, so there's a variety of alternatives. Does it make sense? So that's how you choose. It's not that, oh, you pick and choose as you like, because I'm a devotee, I engage the sun. No, because it has to be considered. It means if you're doing, then you have to do it. Engage the senses means actual engage. You're not engaging, then you don't engage. You don't get involved. Does that make sense? In verse 64 to 72, the Lord answers the last question of Arjuna. How does he walk? How the person in divine consciousness engages his senses. Okay, so now we've just finished. How does he speak? Right? So how does he speak means how is he thinking? How are the senses engaged? Like that. I mean, not engaged, but how is it a consideration? How does he understand? Because speaking means intelligence. And intelligence is all in control of the senses. So how does he intelligently deal with the senses? What is his concept? Right? So that's how he speaks. Right? And so now is we're going to see how does he walk? How does he actually engage the senses? The sthita pragya is free from the dualities of bhoga and tyag because he acts on behalf of Krishna. Right? So there is no bhoga and tyag, but the senses are engaged. This is the problem, you know, we'll see. Does that make sense? Like we were in Hong Kong, and this reporter came. And the devotees in Hong Kong, you know, there's rich businessmen there, so Prabhupada's coming, so they arranged for him to stay in the penthouse suite in the Hilton Hotel. So you could probably say it was the best hotel and the best room in the hotel at that time in Hong Kong. So the reporter comes in and this and that. At some point in the conversation it comes up, but you're spiritual. Why are you in this penthouse suite in the best hotel? You know, because you're spiritual. You're supposed to be all renounced and stuff, right? And then his point was, as a spiritual master represents God, so even if this hotel was made of solid gold, it wouldn't be good enough. It's kind of like, okay, and yes, and so what's your, they don't know what to do with this stuff. Yeah, so that's the point, it's an old bhoga and tyag, because it's just engaged in Lord's service. The devotees have created this out of service to the spiritual master, and he reciprocates by using it. Right? But then the next day, he's not staying in the Hilton Hotel, he's somewhere else. Right? He's staying in some little room, and I think, you know, I'm not sure where he went from there to Tokyo or that. You know, he's staying in a little room with paper walls, you know, out in the middle of nowhere. So, you know, that was the next day. So the point is it's just the senses are engaged, whatever their situation that they're in. So that means there's no bog, there's no tiyak. So when people say, oh, but they're enjoying and this and that, I can remember that walks something about the Vyasa Puja book, right? Oh, no, but, you know, you enjoy so much when they give you that book. And it's like, what has that got to do with it? You know? That's not the point. It's a relationship. You know what I'm saying? So this mundane concepts come in, these impersonal concepts of boga and tiyak. Right? Why do we say impersonalist? What does a karmi think about engaging the senses? It's all bogue. You know, forget the tyag part. You know, what's this tyag part? And the impersonalist, he would just say tyag, but it doesn't work, so he ends up this bogue. You know what I'm saying?
Bogue is part of that process? Or is
it no, it's not part. If they're tantrics, yes, but if they're not tantrics, no. The tantrics are kind of considered, you know, the bottom of the barrel, kind of. Okay. He is satisfying Krishna consciousness and fixed in the Lord. Verses 66 to 67 describe the position of a person who is not connected with the Supreme and therefore fails to control his senses. He cannot achieve peace and happiness. On the other hand, the devotee of the Lord are in perfect peace because they do not have desires to enjoy or renounce the world. Srila Prabhupada writes his purport to verse 70. As long as one has the body, the demands of the body for sense gratification will continue. Sense gratification means the senses are being gratified. So our point is if the senses are being gratified in connection to Krishna, that's not a problem. Right? Because the term is the term. The term is it defines the mechanics of it or the definition of it. At the same time, it also may have its considered good or bad aspect. You know, derogatory or what would be the opposite of derogatory? Just Tory or is that why the Tories think that they're the better political choice?
Well, there's other us Tories, or there's the derogatory.
Huh?
Complimentary.
Yeah, complimentary. Yeah. Does that make sense? So here is then sense gratification is generally used by us to mean, not engaged in the Lord's service. So it's seen as derogatory. The senses, that's what they do. But when it's connected to Krishna, we don't call it sense gratification.
Like taking prasadam.
Yeah. Taking prasadam wouldn't be. I mean, there's always that, if it wasn't a devotee, you'd be walking around with one of those boards, now is the end of the world, and repent, like that kind of thing. So there's always a guy who's, saying that, you eat too much, and this is too fancy, and this and that, you're not brahmachari, you get that. Other than that, yes. It means this. Devotees generally don't think of taking prasad as sense gratification. But you're engaging the senses, you're gratifying the senses. But it's connection to Krishna, so it's service.
And then it should be taking the proper way.
Yes.
Because there's an element also of
Brahman. But that's there, but why? Why shouldn't a Brahman eat too much?
It'll
hamper his service. Yeah, it means you'll be asleep for 3 hours. So it's like, it's a problem. You understand? So those are there just to see that the engagement is going nicely. Right? And why? It's one thing if you're eating just you like it so much and you're eating, but sometimes you're just eating because you're just trying to get very full, or worried that when will prasad be again? You know what I'm saying? So these things are to regulate that, those distractions. The devotee, however, is not disturbed by such desires. Because of his fullness, a Krishna conscious man is not in need of anything, because the Lord fulfills all his material necessities. Therefore, he is like the ocean, always full in himself. Desires may come to him like the waters of the rivers that flow into the ocean, but he is steady in his activities. He is not even slightly disturbed by desires for sense gratification. Right? Seeing them means something comes and it's within your service, then you take that. And engage that in Krishna's service. So it's not sanskrit. That's for your own. And if it's not for you, you just let it go. Right? Does that make sense? So much mail is there, you only take out your ones. Right? So much food is there, you only take what you need. Right? You don't take someone else's food. Right? If I take more than I need, you're taking someone else's food. Right? So the same way, so many opportunities to engage the senses are there, but I only take those ones that are for me. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, he's not distracted. He's not disturbed. That is the proof of a Krishna conscious man, one who has lost all inclinations for material sense gratification. Although the desires are present, because he remains, now here it says, although the desires are present. The desire means there's a field, you see the field, means you're intelligent, you notice like that, and maybe a desire, but at that point it stopped, because that's not for you. Because the point is, if you engage it for Krishna, if you engage something in Krishna's service, what's the important element? What changes? Consciousness changes, but in Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana, what changes? Sambandha? Okay, identity will change. But is the activity, is the field change? Does the activity change? What changes? The result. It's Krishna's result, not our result. Right? Of course, to do that, we've changed our identity and all that, we would see it there. So that from that aspect. But as far as mechanics go, the field and the activity didn't change. Right? So therefore, desire comes up. It's not actually the problem. Right? It's only when you act on the problem, then you get the result. But because you've acted based on the desire, who's the result for? Yourself. Right? Now, if it's in the purview of your area, then that desire is a desire to please Krishna through this activity. So then the activity is performed, it gets a result, which is for Krishna's pleasure. You see? So even if the desire is there, that's not the problem. Like that. You know, Prabhupada, I think it was Pancha Devita, he was on the train with Prabhupada. You know, they get on it, you know, it's stopped in the station, people are walking by and this and that. And then the train starts and it goes and it's starting to, and you can still see the people, and then the people start to become a blur. Right? And then Pancha Devita notices, he's look, just, you know, looking out the window, it's just a blur. And then he catches sight of, you know, some nice looking girl. And then, you know, the guy catches it as it goes by. So he asks Prabhupada, how is it that I could see? Everything's a blur, but my senses were able to catch that there was a girl standing there. And Prabhupada said, it's just habit. That's all. That's what the senses have been doing since time immemorial. So what you consider valuable, that's what the senses catch. Right? In other words, there's this ocean of things, right? It's just like those leaves over there. Anybody here is just like, you know, can't resist, just go over there and eat them off. The, you know, not even to pick them, just eat them straight off the bush. Right? You know what I mean? No, but if you bring that cow over there, they might do that.
That's what you will see.
Yeah. You understand? So, therefore, so much is here, but you only by habit catch those things that you think are sense gratification. So, therefore, you see it and it comes up and the desire's there. That's just habit. But the point is it's not for Krishna. Therefore, there's no endeavor. That way the senses are controlled. And your senses are engaged in activities that are to please Krishna. Right? Yeah, well, see, in the process of not working, the same person that Prabhupada had told him that, then I'm not sure however long later it was, but 10, 15 years later, they used that to basically topple him from his position. They said, no, but then, you know, you'd see a girl, so you're not advanced, you're not this and that.
15 years after?
Yeah, some other devotees did that. You know, to him, to try to pull him out of his position. But, you know, Prabhupada is just, that's a habit. Who cares? Point is what you do. Did he do something with it? Did he go up and pull the little thing and stop the train and jump off and run after the girl? Then you could say, all right, he's got a problem. But he didn't. As soon as it happened, then he asked Prabhupada, what was that? You know? So that's the point. It says, although desires are present, devotees don't read so good. Right? Because they don't know the difference between desire and attachment. Desire may be there, attachment's not. It means attachments comes from, as Baladev says, for the yogi repeatedly contemplates sense objects, thinking you'll derive pleasure from them. When you think you'll derive pleasure, if you contemplate them, not thinking you'll derive pleasure. You know, so that jayata will create attachment. But if you contemplate them without thinking they will derive pleasure, then that breaks, because that's one of the things, tricks of renunciation, is intellectually contemplate the objects of the senses and actually what is there and what's not there. Right? So if one can do that, one uses that. If by thinking in that way you become overly attached, don't do that. But you can understand is then you should be engaged, because if you're engaged, right? In other words, if you're not married, any woman can distract the mind. But if you're married, then you can think about it all day, because that's what you would get. Why did she say that? You know, like that. You know, so you can think all day about it, because the opportunity to engage. So then you can use your intelligence. So in other words, if without engaging the senses, you can use your intelligence analytically, then that's better. But if by using that way one becomes attached, then better one engages the senses. Because in that thing, then he'll think so, you know, very detached, right? You know what I'm saying? So that make sense? So that's the point. In any case, it's analyzed. It's tried to be understood. Therefore, then desires can be looked at, and then desire can see there's nothing here. Right? Because if there's a goal for Krishna, then I engage in the activities. No goal for Krishna, I don't. The Lord's devotees are internally renounced, but externally very active in devotional service. They don't have selfish desires and are free from false ego. One is never bewildered after attaining such a position in spiritual life. Even at the hour of death, one who is thus situated reaches Krishna's abode. Okay. So we run out of time, so we'll conclude tomorrow, hopefully. And it's kind of like, yeah, so. Yeah, we only have half a page, no, three quarters. Well, between the two, one page left, so we should finish tomorrow. That was a joke.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.